Welcome to the Laurie Lawrence podcast, Stuff the Silver, We're Going for Gold. This podcast came about by me wanting to value add to my online swim teacher and coaching platform, worldwideswimschool.com. It was simply an idea that I'd read and share chapters of the two books that I'd written about my 8 Olympic Games adventures. And when I run out of chapters, I'd interview some of the great sportsmen and sportswomen that I'd encountered over the 50 years of my international coaching career. Tell your friends, if it helps one person expand their lives a little or achieve their dreams, it will have served the purpose. If it doesn't do this, try at least to remember, the harder you work, the harder it is to surrender. Never judge a book by its cover. Peter Evans and Neil Brooks. You wouldn't find Peter Evans in a fancy gym, pumping iron, glancing at developing biceps in giant floor-to-ceiling mirrors, flexing triceps, wearing those hugging like grass cycle pants that accentuate certain sections of the anatomy, or even oiling his body and brushing his hair back to catch the ladies' attention. You would have much more likely mistaken him for that puny weakling who had sand kicked in his face on the beach. My first close contact with Peter Evans, a slender, sandy-haired Western Australian with turned-out feet and a warped sense of humour, came at the Australian team headquarters, Coogee Migrant Hostel in Sydney, while we were preparing for the 1982 Brisbane Commonwealth Games. It was hard to believe that this man was Australia's most successful breaststroker of the 1980s. He had a gold and a bronze medal from the 1980 Olympics in Moscow. He would subsequently add to this collection a gold medal at the Brisbane Commonwealth Games and 2 Olympic bronze medals in Los Angeles. Never judge a book by its cover. Peter Evans was a great racer, one of the best, a swimmer you could count on in a crisis. He was very similar to a young lad, a 17-year-old kid I coached called John Seaman, who in 1984 beat the Albatross, the mighty Michael Gross, plus Pablo Morales, to win the Olympic gold medal in the 200 metres butterfly in world record time. But let's get back to Peter Evans. In 1980, as he and Neil Brooks, Mark Tonelli and Mark Kerry were winning gold for us in the 4x100 metres medley relay at the Moscow Olympic Games, I was, among the millions of other patriotic Australians, glued to the television set, screaming my assistance to this quartet. We know they couldn't have won without our cheering. In fact, at Olympic Games and Commonwealth Games, it is mandatory for anyone calling himself an Aussie to spend hours in front of the idiot box cheering for our sporting representatives. Peter Evans amazed me. He certainly wasn't my cup of tea as a dedicated, hard-working, disciplined swimmer. Hell, I had 8-year-olds with better training habits, but he was a racer, and that's a key ingredient in any successful competitor. He was a racer. Me personally, I was used to the work ethic of such swimmers as Steve Holland and Tracy Wickham, who took pride at being first into the pool and last out. So Peter's training philosophy came as a huge shock when I met him for the first time. At training, he took pains to make sure he was last into the water and first out. He preferred sunbaking to training. Most swimmers do, but Peter actually practiced what he preached. He would spend hours on the pool deck, walking, pointing, laughing, relaxing, while all the other swimmers slogged the miles, practiced their dives, worked on their turns. In fact, if you weren't familiar with the team composition, you would have been forgiven for thinking that Peter Evans was an extra young coach put on the team for experience. How did he perform so well? He was a racer, that's how. The ultimate competitor with superb mental toughness. Superb mental toughness makes great racers. One of the real characters of the 1982 Brisbane Commonwealth Games, Peter, Motormouth, was never lost for words, nor short of practical jokes. Peter helped maintain sanity in the team when we were housed at the Coogee Hilton in preparation for the battles ahead in Brisbane. Coogee Hilton was the Coogee Migrant Hostel. You would never find an Australian team staying at the Coogee Hilton, the Coogee Migrant Hostel, these days. But in preparation for the 1982 Commonwealth Games, that is where we stayed. Peter was the first man to every party and the last to leave. If there wasn't a party on, he was organising one. He loved life and he lived it to the full. His cup ran over. Evans and Big Neil Brooks were Western Australian soulmates, the odd couple, Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger, inseparable, bonded together by their magnificent Olympic gold medal relay in Moscow. Peter Evans's main competition in Brisbane was his complete antithesis. It was Victor Davis, the world record holder. Davis, as the Americans might put it, was one mean son of a bitch, an animal. Victor got as much fun out of terrorizing his opponents out of the water as he did from beating them in the pool. He was the type of person kindergarten teachers handcuffed at lunchtime. He would come out to race more like Muhammad Ali, the heavyweight boxing champion of the world, rather than a swimmer. Such was his lasting presence and impression on me, I need only to close my eyes to visualize him shadow sparring, dancing onto the Chandler pool deck in his white Canadian knee-length robe with the red maple leaf on the back, hood pulled down over his head, snorting fire, waiting for the bell to ring. Removal of the robe revealed a magnificent physical specimen. Suntanned, stomach rippling, muscle-toned, hair curly, and bleached, teeth even and pearly white. He was an awesome sight, and the vision of him is a sporting image I'll treasure for life. Modern sports psychologists impress upon athletes and coaches the importance of mental domination of your opponents. Somehow, somewhere, sometimes before the race, you are told to seek out a chink in your opponent's mental armor and exploit any mental weaknesses he may have. Exuding confidence? Victor Davis was a master at it. His pre-race ritual was enough to intimidate even the most experienced competitors. He would shadow box, bound, skip, stalk the pool deck, commanding the attention of spectator and competitor alike, and then he'd lie down on the deck beside the racing block and plunge his magnificent well-oiled body into the beckoning water. Any opponent not accustomed or alert to this domination ritual, although physically harmless, like the chest beating of the mountain gorilla, was often beaten before the starter's gun sounded, psyched out and intimidated by Victor's very presence. He was, as the Americans called, an absolute stud. On the morning of the heats of the men's 100 metres breaststroke in Brisbane, the awesome sight of Victor Davis greeted Peter Evans. Peter was, by then, a seasoned competitor. Steeled not to be intimidated by such a peacock display, he was, however, slightly nervous. All good competitors get nasty butterflies immediately before they compete. Nevertheless, Evans was determined to race tough and to do his country proud. No one in their wildest dreams could predict what was about to happen. Take your mark. There was a slight movement for the swimmer in lane six. Stand up, gentlemen, please. Too late. The swimmers' bodies coiled, ears tuned, straining, listening for the slightest sound and poised for instant reaction. They false started. Vic, the ultimate competitor, used the false start for his maximum advantage, making a split-second decision to further intimidate his Australian opponent. As he hit the water, he immediately changed direction. Swift as an ocean predator, he swirled under the lane rope, brushing against a relaxed Peter Evans. Peter was not expecting the stray foot or wandering hand which ripped his goggles off. Thousands of skin divers throughout the world will attest that the sensation experienced when the clear vision afforded by a good pair of goggles becomes suddenly blurred is highly disconcerting. When this sensation is accompanied by a swirling water and body contact with a huge predator, it becomes bloody frightening. Peter Evans emerged from the pool clearly upset. He was bewildered and unnerved. Nearby, Victor Davis snarled and prowled the deck, a wild animal in complete control. Behind the blocks, gentlemen. Take your mark. Bang! The starter's gun. Davis was ready. A magnificent dive with perfect streamlining saw him spear to the lead. A beautiful, controlled first 50 metres, a well-executed turn, and a powerful finish saw Victor Davis make the heat a one-boat race. Davis controlled all. The pool, his opponents, the deck, and he had a magnificent heat win. This was a huge psychological advantage over all opposition. Victor Davis wins round one. "Honestly, Brooksy, he kicked me," wailed Peter Evans, brushing his hair vigorously as he dried it. "What?" questioned the big man incredulously. "He kicked me." "How?" "When we false started, going back to the side, his foot kicked my face."
"Are you sure?"
"Yes."
"Ah, it must have been an accident. This is swimming, not kickboxing."
"Brooksy, he did it on purpose. He laughed at me afterwards. It actually scared me."
"The bastard."
"Wait till tonight," snapped Neil Brooks. "All I want is a fair go, Brooksy. I'll race him, but I just want a fair go," responded Peter Evans.
"Tonight you shall have it," said the affable 2-metre giant. "Leave it to me. You only worry about your race." That night, I drove a happy Australian team to Chandler in my old Bedford bus. The spirits were high, all the windows were open, and strains of Waltzing Matilda greeted spectators and families who thronged to the pool to hunt autographs and watch their Australian heroes battle the Canadians, the Poms, and the other Commonwealth cousins. The spirits were high. All the windows were open and strains of Waltzing Matilda greeted spectators and families who thronged to the pool to hunt autographs and watch their Australian heroes battle the Canadians, the Poms, and the other Commonwealth cousins. Brooksy sat at the front of the bus, pensive, staring out the window, deep in thought. I stopped the bus close to the entrance and he was first out. He strode purposefully towards the pool, brushing through the swelling crowd, oblivious to the back slapping and well wishes of the crowd. "Good on you, Brooksy," one fan yelled. "Love your bald head," from another. "What are you going to do tonight, Neil?"
"What are you going to do tonight, Neil?"
cooed a sweet 16-year-old.
"The mean machine's great,"
cried a young boy with close-cropped hair.
"Yeah, the mean machine's great,"
chorused his three mates. They too had close-cropped hair.
"Yeah,
but you're the best, Brooksy," yelled the one with the shortest hair. All these remarks fell on deaf ears. Neil Brooks didn't even notice the little autograph seekers with whom he would normally stop and joke for 20 minutes as he signed his name. His mind was totally preoccupied. Victor Davis's curly hair and flashing smile neoned into his subconscious. He hurried into the pool. He couldn't wait. The pool was brilliantly lit. Team banners from all countries covered the chairs. Uniformed officials busied themselves arranging timing gear, tightening backstroke flags, checking false start ropes, wheeling in the electronic touchpads. The announcer put on the Men at Work song used by a victorious American Cup yachtsman. "I come from a land down under," and it blared from the loudspeakers. Spectators started to fill the stands. The well-informed spectators were there to watch the warming up. The racing atmosphere there at Chandler was slowly building to a crescendo. Brooksy missed it all. He threw his green and gold team swimming bag onto the red plastic chairs reserved for the Australian team, and he sprawled himself over a chair and waited. He waited and watched. He was more like a wild animal stalking prey than an athlete waiting to compete for his country. Once, he stood up and paced the deck, eyes squinting, never leaving the entrance. Alert. The English team arrived, the Kiwis next. Finally, the Canadians filed through the door, laughing, skylarking, twirling towels. Victor Davis was at the centre of attention. Eyes shining, sun-bleached curls, perfect teeth. Brooksy spotted him and stunned. His eyes narrowed even further. He had found what he was waiting for. His prey had arrived. The next 3/4 of an hour must have been an eternity for him as he stalked Victor Davis, waiting for an opportunity to pounce. His eyes never left the Canadian hero. Just like a jungle cat, he was patient. Victor was relaxed and confident. Smiling, he went through his normal pre-race stretching warm-up. He went through it slowly and deliberately. This complete, he loosened up in the water with some easy swimming, some kick, some stroke drills, before signalling his bald-headed, gravel-voiced coach, Cliff Barry, to time his pace work and check the small specifics in his dives and turns. This was a perfect preparation. Finally, Victor was ready. He eased his magnificent body out of the water and headed for the dressing rooms to change into his racing gear. Brooksy watched, stiffened, stood upright, and seized his opportunity. He followed silently, 2 paces behind, seeking the privacy of the dressing room to confront Victor. The rest is Canadian or Australian folklore, with variations depending on who is telling the story. This is how I'm told the confrontation went. Victor. Yes, man. Victor. Brooksy raised his voice and spun Victor around to face him. Brooksy towered over him. I just want to warn you about Peter Evans, Victor. Brooksy hissed. If you so much as touch a hair on his head tonight, I'll personally put my fist down your throat and pull your ass out of your mouth. With that, the leader of the Mean Machine, bald head glowing, spun on his heel and marched onto the pool deck to rejoin his Aussie teammates. His mission was accomplished. He was relieved and confident that his little mate, Peter Evans, would now have an even chance. The race for the gold would come down to physical ability, mental toughness, not physical intimidation. Canadian folklore now has the same story up until the dressing room interlude, and then the interpretation strays. Victor, about Peter Evans. Oh, piss off, Neil, snapped Davis. Let the little jerk look after himself. I'm too busy preparing for a gold medal performance to be worried by your whinging. With that, Victor spun on his heel and stormed out of the dressing shed, leaving Big Brooksy stunned and stammering for words. Look, I'm not sure which version you prefer to believe. Whatever happened, it made no difference to the results in the breaststroke final. Victor Davis was too fast, too aggressive, just too good. He was Lord of the Breaststroke at the Commonwealth Games in Brisbane with 2 gold medals. He was the king. Peter won gold in Brisbane too as a member of the 4x100 gold medal relay team. But in the breaststroke finals, he had to be satisfied with minor placings behind the great champion, the awesome Victor Davis. Here's a little footnote to this story. In 1989, the swimming world was stunned to receive the news that Victor Davis was dead. He had seemed invincible. How could this happen, we wondered. Well, Victor had been the victim of a speeding car. The details are obscure and sketchy. We're told, Victor, in the company of a young lady friend, had argued with some Canadian young men at a nightclub. The young men left. Victor pursued them outside and, in an attempt to stop them, stood unflinching, arms out wide, spread in front of their fast-approaching car. Victor was no match for the car and the attribute that made him world champion. His fearlessness undoubtedly contributed to his death. God bless Victor Davis. He left the world with many great sporting memories, and I reckon he'd still be up there fighting in heaven. I just hope that St. Peter doesn't want to race him. Thank you for listening to this latest episode of Stuff the Silver. We're going for gold. To stay up to date with all episodes, please subscribe to this podcast. For more information, visit laurielawrence.com.au.
It's alive, Jesus, fire!